DevOps. Auf die Ohren und ins Hirn. Ein Podcast rund um DevOps.
Von Dirk Söllner, Falco Werner und Luca Ingerni.
Welcome to a new episode of DevOps auf die Ohren und ins Hirn. Or in English, DevOps from your ears straight to your brain. Usually this is a German language podcast, but we sometimes make exceptions for international guests. Today is one such exception. My name is Luca Ingerni and I host this podcast together with my colleagues Dirk Söllner and Falco Werner. We are DevOps consultants, trainers and coaches trying to get teams to work together better and create better products for their customers. And today I'll be running this podcast alone because Dirk is on holiday and Falco is the DevOps Enterprise Summit. But I have the luck of being joined by Amit Eliav, who is the founder and CEO of GetAI, where he tries to help companies unlock immense business value using AI. Amit, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Luca. It's so good to be here and to meet you again.
Yes. Yeah. No, I'm very much looking forward to this episode. Amit, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
So as you said, I am the founder and CEO of GetAI, and our mission is to help companies unlock immense business value using AI. We do it across a wide range of sectors like hospitals, tech startups, insurance companies, and more. A few years ago, I researched generative AI at the university before it was called generative AI, and also built a generative AI venture. Even before I built system as a software engineer in the military, AI products for big companies.
So how long is it that big companies have been using AI then?
So back at 2018, I worked for Microsoft, and I can attest just to that I was part of an AI team trying to improve the recommendation system Xbox. I'm not sure how long before companies have been using it.
And that was used in production, so that wasn't just a research project at Microsoft or something.
Absolutely, and it was not something new back then in 2018.
That brings me to a question that I've been itching to ask, but I think we'll take this question second. And first, we're going to honor the tradition of this podcast of having every guest give us their own personal definition of DevOps. So Amit, what's yours?
So I thought about it, and my definition of DevOps is doing the hard, back in the shadows, necessary work that doesn't get the praise when it deserves it and when everything goes well, but gets all the spotlight when things go wrong.
So if I'm hearing you say this, it feels like you're talking very, very specifically about the production side of, you know, operations side of IT. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. The question that I've been wanting to ask is to maybe actually come, similar to the question we just answered, to come up with a definition of AI. Like, what's the difference between an AI and automation? Like, I suppose we can agree that Jenkins is not an AI, but where does AI begin? And also, where do maybe adjacent approaches live? You know, what's the difference between an AI and just a heuristic? Or what's the difference between AI and just data science? Because like I imagine that what you did for this Xbox recommendation engine, you know, might have been just a regular statistics engine, right? You find correlations and you just spit them out. Where does AI actually begin?
It began at the research level very, very long ago, but around 2012, neural nets became more in the mainstream, not really in the mainstream, but they got more powerful together with advances in computations. I think AI started very long ago, the 1980s or 1970s.
Yeah, no, but I didn't mean when does AI begin in terms of time, but like in terms of, I don't know, complexity or what distinguishes an AI from a statistical model?
That's a really funny question. A few years ago, I read a book, Gedel Escher Bach, which is a very old book that talks about AI. And the definition there is very funny, actually. AI definition changes all the time, because when computers are able to do something we back then thought was impossible, then this becomes AI for a few years. But then, like people say, everyone can do that. That's not AI. That's just computer vision. Like back then, Alan Turing defined AI a program that can pass the Turing test. When you talk to a computer and...
Arguably, Eliza could do that back in the 60s or 70s, I guess.
Yeah, they passed it long ago. But in conclusion, AI's definition changes all the time as per what's the new development. And what differentiates it from just machine learning? Actually, every machine learning is an AI, but it's not necessarily the other way around. Like, you can just write very complex algorithm and it can also be AI.
All right. So what is the answer then? The answer is nobody knows. Is that what it boils down to? Or is it anything that looks like witchcraft? Or
it's a good question. AI is basically artificial intelligence. So everything that you'd call that has intelligence and is artificial is AI. And the definition of what's really intelligent, it changes all the time.
Okay. All right. And the another question that I wrote down for you, and which I suppose I can already sense the answer to, is what's different about the AI craze that we see today now? What's different about it than the first AI craze of the 1970s, and then the one in the 1980s, and then the one in the 1990s? I can't remember one in the 2000s, but that might just be me. But it feels like every 10, 15 years, there's a new AI craze. So what's different about the present one?
So about this, I think a few things are different. The most obvious thing is that now it is very generally available. The ChatGPT by OpenAI was the quickest product to get to 100 million users. So it's very generally available, and it is very, very powerful. It inhabits knowledge like, not like a real human, but close to it. And you don't need or have to be a pro data scientist to use it. So people just started to tell each other, I saw this new product. It's ChatGPT. It helps me do my work better. And just the word spread like crazy. So to summarize, you don't need to be a pro to use it.
Yeah, I think that might be the big difference, right? I imagine back in the, from what I read, back in the 70s, only a handful of people could use it. And probably it was able to do surprising things even back then, but it never moved to the mainstream, right? Because I suppose computers weren't really mainstream back then.
Yeah, actually the huge development was even a few years before ChatGPT by the model GPT-3, but it didn't really get to the mainstream because of the UI that exposed it. ChatGPT really resonated with people because it is very intuitive. It's just a chat everyone can use. Just log in and interact with the language model that it is.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? That the power of an AI engine is not just, you know, influenced by the actual power of the neural network or whatever other thing is behind it, but also how, as you said, how approachable it is for regular humans and whether you can actually ask it the right questions and then understand its answers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of, arguably, one of the biggest little genius of OpenAI.
I've never used AI in production. And I'm really curious to talk through some approaches with you. And so let's just try to maybe think about ways in which you could imagine AI might be usable presently in DevOps work.
In DevOps work. So what, maybe we can discuss it a little bit. What do you think are the biggest pains in the DevOps work currently?
Well, of course, it depends on who you ask, and it depends on the specifics. But you know, one thing that I find is really difficult to get right is to have a good value perspective and share knowledge across, or rather, share responsibility across the team. So it's really a matter of human communication, and I'm wondering in what ways AI would be helpful there. Or another thing that I'm seeing is how to ensure continued high quality of our product. So I'm thinking in terms of, you know, supporting production, or I'm thinking in terms of having a solid library of tests, or I'm thinking in terms of being able to discover value for our customers. So it's quite broad, but there must be something juicy in there where you can say, oh, yeah, this feels like a task that today's AI could be helpful for, you know, for real cross-functional DevOps teams.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the first thing you said, you could just fill all the documentation of the organization, and that includes even code, like real code, like Java code, Python code, data about on the onboarding presentations and the history of Slack messages, and have a bot that's it, that is the first responder to questions about the org's data. And what it does is just scanning through the org's data, everything, and comes up with an answer. If it's good enough, you can just check that as done. You don't need a real human doing a machine's job in that way. And if it's not good enough, so a human can step in and provide better support. And the second thing you said is ensuring the continuous quality of the product, right? What do you mean? Like automating tests?
Possibly, or you know, could I use, quite specifically, could I use the AI to derive test cases from like user stories?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can do that.
Okay, and could I trust a present AI system to come up with valuable, useful and correct test cases, or would a human still need to double check?
When generating code, it's very recommended to use a human in the loop approach, because there will be always small misunderstanding and small errors a human would need to check and fix. But it can definitely do the first go and let it do the boring work that's possible to automate and add real value on top of the AI.
Right. So I would feed it a user story, and it would come back to me with a suite of tests that I would, I suppose, still need to fill in a couple of blanks or correct a couple of misunderstandings. Essentially, only like code review, right? You know, I don't actually have to write all of this myself. I can read it through and say, yeah, this looks correct, this looks correct. Ah, then, you know, there's something dodgy going on over there. But only making corrections and not generating the test cases myself.
So I would expect it to generate some good test cases, some that would be not good to push to production, like not the real direction at all. And I'd expect you to generate some tests yourself, or ask ChatGPT to come up with more test cases that fits better what you need.
So I could even iterate with ChatGPT and reference the old test cases that it made and said, well, those are not cutting it. Make better ones.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite good at that.
Interesting. And to me, that is something that feels very important to enable ourselves to close those feedback loops quickly, because I feel like that is still something that is a struggle for many organizations to really, you know, not just build the forward direction, but also ensure that tests get created early enough in high enough volume that they are run often enough. So that's very interesting. Perhaps even more interesting than doing like, that's an interesting idea. Could you have an AI do on-call work and have the AI respond if something, you know, if the monitoring fires an alert or something?
Yeah, actually I thought about it a little bit yesterday. I wouldn't trust it to be the only on-call guy. I would currently trust it to ease the work of the on-call. Maybe surface real insights that says where the problem lies and a suggestion of what to do to fix it. But I wouldn't hire an AI and risk all the reputation of a company, because maybe there will be a bug, and maybe it won't be 100% accurate. Sometimes it just makes stuff up. We all faced it, right?
Oh, that's That's interesting. Talk more about this making stuff up.
Yeah, so how it's trained is to produce output that looks good, but it does not have to be correct. It's really, really good at completing what you ask it to do. So if you'd ask it to do something and it doesn't know how to do it, it might not tell you and just make stuff up that don't exist. Like we just, what we've seen, it makes up papers, names in science that don't exist just to support its cases. And its output looks good, but sometimes it just looks good and it's just false.
And wouldn't there be a way of having the AI be honest and say, well, I don't know, instead of just making something up?
Yeah, you can ask it. You can really, really stress it to it. It's good because it's really good at following instructions. And if you give it the possibility, and it's a good practice, to always give it a way out. Like instead of asking it to classify a sentence between true or false, give it also the neutral option when it's not sure. Or tell it, if you're not sure, say, I don't know. I wouldn't currently put an AI to do all the responsibility of the on-call and just assist the AI.
And do you expect that AI will sort of remain in this assistive role, or do you expect AI to grow as far as actually replacing, for example, an on-call engineer for the ordinary on-call tasks?
It's really interesting with the rise of AutoGPT. I'll recap quickly what it means. AutoGPT is just an agent, an AI agent, where you send it to do some mission and give it some tools to do it, like search the web, search Wikipedia, use a calculator, and chooses which skills or tools to use and comes back to you with a solution once it has it. So in the future, I'm guessing yes, because it's such a pain being on call, right? And waking up in the middle of the night, having to understand what's wrong and saving the infrastructure of the company, basically. I think it's an important enough problem. I expect it to be solved. One of the things that characterizes technological development is the exponential phase of it. Basically and generally, I think it's very unintuitive how fast the future technology will pace. Like we all seen during COVID and understood a little better exponential math. Now all this technological advancement only make the pace go faster and faster in a way that's very unintuitive. So to recap, yeah, I think in the future it will be solved unintuitively. And before we know it.
Interesting. So what I'm getting a sense of is that AIs do better the better their training data is, the more regular maybe it is. So I wonder if something like help desk work, that should be essentially a perfect task for an AI, right? The typical set of problems is fairly limited. The resolution is often the same. There's hopefully good documentation and so on.
Yeah. That's a very close problem. And I think even today you can put an AI, and the companies are doing it already, like putting AI as a first responder, letting a human deal only with the more complicated, unsupported.
How would I actually do that? Like, let's assume that I want to ease the burden of my help desk workers by applying an AI in production. How, like, is that a stage in a Jenkins pipeline? How do I use an AI in this capacity?
So by help desk, what do you mean? Like general questions about IT and...
Yeah, that sort of thing. Oh, my printer's not working. Oh, my password reset. Oh, okay. Maybe those are even too simplistic things because like that can literally be handled by an FAQ. But yeah, so sort of just your regular help desk type conversations.
So the ones that can be handled by an FAQ definitely can be solved today by just giving a summarized answer from the FAQ documentation from the organization. I guess there are products that do that, but you can also develop something for free on your data using Python library called LangChain, which is a new library that takes all the organization knowledge, and it can be anything textual. It indexes it in a way that it can query it very, very efficiently. And once it receives a question from someone seeking support from the help desk, searches for the relevant part of the organization knowledge or documents, and it can just summarize the answer. And it's really easy to use. It's very quick.
That brings me to an interesting, different thought. Like, maybe you're familiar with the idea of the wall of confusion. Okay, so that is a concept that is often used in DevOps to describe what goes on between, let's call it, a traditional development team and a traditional operations team, where each has their own job. You know, the development team's job is to write code. The operations team's job is it to take this code and have it run in production somehow. The problem with this separation is that you get conflicts of interest, right? The developers essentially are only concerned with churning out lots of curly brackets. That's their job. Whether it runs in production, how it runs in production, it's like, not our problem. The operations guys, of course, say, well, we don't actually care about new stuff. Our role is it to guarantee stability. So please don't change anything. Please don't rock the boat. That way we can guarantee stability. And the whole premise of DevOps was to remove this conflict of interest and, in fact, this sort of almost language barrier or certainly barrier of perception, and by saying, you know what? You all together are responsible for continuously delivering value to the customer. So if the system goes down, that's not just operations problem, that's everybody's problem. And conversely, if we are too slow at iterating and creating new value, that's not just development's problem, that's everybody's problem. And that was a long introduction. My question was, how could maybe AI and ChatGPT really help overcome this language barrier? So I was thinking, you know, could I, as maybe an ops engineer, use ChatGPT to help me figure out where in the code a particular bug might lurk? So not give definitive answers, but something of the nature of, oh yeah, look over there. That's a likely candidate. Is that something that would be doable? I guess, you know, you could have the AI read the entire code base and then make assumptions about where something happens.
That's absolutely doable. I think Copilot X by GitHub is going to do that. So I don't suggest implementing it from scratch, but feel free if you want. You can just ask GPT or ChatGPT to spot a bug in your code. It comes up with good answers sometimes. And it's for sure doable, can be done. It can even ease the burden of code review and make, you know, linting rules in code review. So it can do, instead of just linting rules, it can spot bugs or ask for changes that are sometimes a little awkward to ask. So you know that it's a little awkward. So you say, as a code reviewer, so I'll pass that. I already posted enough comments. It doesn't feel bad. So it can ensure better code for everybody, even better relationships, because sometimes people take it personally.
Yeah, that's true, right? Okay, so how would I guess I interrupted you in answering that question before. How would I actually practically do that? How would I integrate an AI into my workflow? Let's call it AI linter, just be a pipeline stage? Sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it can be. It can be. If you want to develop a custom solution, so it will be. But I don't recommend it. Just recommend, if you want to do it for fun, so go ahead. But I think free, low-cost solutions are going to be very high quality.
Do you expect them to stay low-cost?
I do, because there is currently a race in the world. Arguably, last week, real AI breakthrough, because Google came out with their own good version of AI. People say the iPhone revolution didn't happen when the iPhone came out, but when Google came out with Android. So if you can compare the two, right now is the iPhone revolution of AI.
because now we have competition.
We have competition. We have all the big companies trying to come up with their own large language models. And when there is big competitions with a lot of players, economy says the prices will go down to the price of the cost to serve those services, and it will just become commodity.
And you expect that to happen quickly?
I don't know how quickly, but I expect that to happen. Yeah.
Yes, it is. But I wonder if it's simply cheap to sort of bait people into it and get them used to the idea, and then eventually everybody will ratchet up the prices to actually be covering their cost. Because it can't be cheap to run all of those huge server farms.
I guess so, but I really don't know.
But, you know, since we are already looking at the crystal ball, like, what do you expect to become possible in the near future? And maybe also, what do you expect to never become possible?
I expect writing code will be easier and easier over time. Right now, it already is quite easy. People can go inside a project they have never seen before in a language, a code language they don't know. It's possible for them to start delivering quite quickly, even today. And I think that trend will continue. I think AI will get into every aspect of our life where it can give us value and where we'd want it. But that's only a guess. I really don't stand really behind it. It's hard to predict the future.
Fair enough. Let's go back to the present. How would you practically go about building something like a GPT-based app?
If we'd want to build the kind of app that we discussed before with the knowledge base, it's really easier to discuss something concrete. I'd set up, for example, a web page or a Slack bot, if the organization is using Slack. Serve up a backend using LangChain Python and index all the organization data. Let the Slack bot be the first responder to support requests.
And what should I expect in terms of resources that I need to set aside for such an AI? Like, do I need my own server farm now?
Your own server for that? Yeah, you'd need your own server to serve the backend. Depends if it's your own server or the Slack or Teams add-ons. I don't know.
But yeah, I'm thinking also in terms of like how big of a support system do I need? Do I need a single machine? Do I need an entire farm? Do I need...
Really, really small machine, because if you use, for example, OpenAI's models, as an API, it doesn't need to be strong. You get all the embeddings of the knowledge of the organization also from an API. If you want to reduce costs a little bit and use open source software, so you'd need bigger server, maybe with a GPU, but it really depends on the case.
And then I just, you know, have this chat interface or something that is included somewhere in my app. That sounds deceptively easy. What am I missing?
It really is easy.
But I think, you know, just thinking about this, I can clearly see how you can be very valuable to companies, because like you help me, for one, navigate all of this confusing stuff and essentially, you know, giving me confidence that yes, you can actually do this, and yes, it's going to work. That in itself is already worth a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. We believe in delivering value and bring this revolution to companies to get the word out. Let everyone enjoy this value.
So we talked about before about how to phrase your requests to ChatGPT. And I was wondering if you could maybe expand on that a little bit and make it even more broad and concrete. So, for instance, is it better to try to come up with a perfect question right off the bat, or should I just start with something really murky and then refine in conversation? What's the better approach? And do I need to be worried about like leading the AI towards an answer that might sound pleasing but is not actually helpful?
It really depends on the use case. If you are going to use GPT in production, you really need to make sure the prompt and the answer is really robust, because the answer that it's going to give you, you're going to have to handle each output it gives you. So initially, it can give you every string that exists on Earth. It can return you and quote Shakespeare. And you have to make sure you can handle each and every possible output. So if you just need a yes-no question to be answered, you have to make sure and test it on a really diverse set of examples, so you know what's expected out of that prompt. So really make sure before you deploy, and even we're on a DevOps podcast, you need to shift left and test your prompts earlier and often before you write the code architecture, because it really depends prompt and the outputs and what it can give you. So I encourage doing that first.
So what you're saying is that before I actually introduce it or include it in my product, I should sit down and just play with the prompt a little bit and see what kind of requests I ought to be making and how the responses feel. Is that what you're saying?
Even more than that, I suggest more than just eyeballing a few examples in the OpenAI playground, I say run it on hundreds of examples. And you need to be very damn sure about the robustness of the prompt before you deploy it to production. And actually, I built a free tool for that. You can put it in the comments.
That sounds like I need to actually do rather extensive automated tests of my AI prompts. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I say you have to validate.
Could I even automate this? Because it feels like I can... Of course, I can replay a natural language prompt, but how could I even parse the response without actually using my own AI? So at this point, I'm back to using a human to validate the AI so that I can save effort for a human?
Yeah, that's a good point, but there actually is a solution to this. You can use an AI to validate, but the validation is not 100% accurate. So, for example, the tool I published lets you see all the outputs of hundreds of examples, all the outputs from the prompts, and lets you choose the engine that's running the outputs. And it also helps you to validate that the outputs are correct in natural language. So the validation really can be not correct, but it mostly is, because you test it really good, that the validation is correct. And from now on, you can just play with the prompt and make sure it's good. You can do just a quick check to see validation prompt is good. The tool, there are, I guess, other tools out there, but the tool, it just marks in red the outputs that are not correct, and in green the ones that are correct. And it just assists you in the job. It's not completely automated. You need to validate the validator a little bit, but it really is the job, from experience.
Let's think this through. If I wanted to concretely add AI to, let's say, to my product development process, let's not even talk about the actual like customer-facing product, but just within something that is a little more controllable, such as my own organization. What do I even need, and where should I start? Do I need an account at OpenAI, or do I use a local AI implementation, or what's the best starting point? And it sounds like I need a validation tool like the one you wrote to help me hone. What else do I need? What's sort of the minimal set of things I should need to download, create accounts for, and so on and so on?
Yeah, so the minimal is set up an account in a company that provides a large language model such as OpenAI and get an API key you can just use to run your prompts using an API, provided, of course, if you want to build a custom software for your organization. You can, we all know how to use ChatGPT's UI, yeah. But to use the API, you just need an account.
Okay, and that's all I need. I don't actually need your validation tool then, do I? Or do I still need it?
It's not a must. If you deploy, if you use it in production, I really encourage to validate the prompts, because as I said before, the range of outputs that comes out might really influence the architecture of the code in the future. So I encourage to shift left with this.
Is this something that a person can do in a day, in a week, in a month?
It depends on the quality and all that, but it can be a few days, a week, two weeks.
Interesting. Okay, so really all I need is an API key for OpenAI. Oh, by the way, that means that I give all of my like company secrets to this third party and to this AI, and I suppose I can't be sure that the AI, which doesn't know any better, will just regurgitate it to others, will it? I think there's a story that Samsung accidentally revealed a couple of their company secrets through the use of an OpenAI, I think.
Yeah, I think they used the free version. You, of course, need to... this podcast will be here for a while, so I can't... What I say now may change in the future, so check the privacy terms of use of each product. Right now, using the API of OpenAI, it won't reveal private information. But if you need to, if you can't share customer data outside of your cloud, it's also possible to deploy those models in your own cloud.
At the same quality as, say, OpenAI?
Yeah, you can deploy it on Azure, which is a which is powered by Microsoft, which has 49% of OpenAI.
All right, that was a fascinating trip into a world that I frankly don't know very much about yet. Before we close the podcast, is there something that I've forgotten? Is there something that you wish I had asked you?
You wish you had asked me? I'm not sure. I can't think of such a thing.
All right, I guess that's a good sign. I mean, thank you so much for joining this show and telling us about this fascinating new world. If people want to learn more about you and maybe make use of your services, where could people find you?
You can check out our website, book an appointment.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what's the website? Tell me.
It's getai.consulting.
That's actually a pretty cool URL. Getai.consulting. All right. And I guess we'll get links to some of the products you mentioned and stick them in the show notes.
Absolutely.
As well as, obviously, a link to getai.consulting. Thank you so much for being here. This was very fascinating. I wish you a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.